Okay, so Rayim Tovim, Erev Tov, everybody. Welcome to part three of the Torah in Motion and Derecheha series on women and ritual, men and women and ritual, a textual analysis. Today is part two on tzitzit. So we're left hanging from last week. So we're looking forward to continuing the whole issue on women wearing tzitzit. And as those who heard last week, no, it's a little bit more complex than one might have thought than a simple yes or no. And we're looking forward to Lori Shear. It's Bevakasha.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight. I'm looking forward to continuing where we left off. Just a quick recap to remind us what we saw last time. So we started out by looking at the mitzvah tzitzit itself, which really, I mean, based on a simple reading of the verses, does not seem particularly gendered. And then we saw that, in fact, in Tannaitic times, Mishnaic times, there was a debate about whether tzitzit could be obligatory for women, whether tzitzit would be considered a positive time-bound mitzvah. Halacha follows the opinion that it is a positive time-bound mitzvah and that women are exempt from tzitzit. And at the same time, we saw some examples already well into the Talmudic period of Rabbanim who would share four-cornered garments with their wives, and those garments would have tzitzit on them, and presumably when the wives wore them, they would have tzitzit on them as well, and it doesn't seem to have been a particular issue in those texts. And we started talking about why it might be an issue, and in particular, the issue that we focused on last week was of kli gever, cross-dressing, and whether we would consider tzitzit to be a form of cross-dressing. And we saw that it was sort of that argument, even though it's first floated in an earlier time period in the Targum Yerushalmi, that argument becomes much more compelling at the stage at which tzitzit become really a ritual garment, meaning the people as opposed to, I'm sorry, Ms. Silverstein, your mic is on. If you could mute it, it would be helpful. When people would have their four-cornered garments, and that would be how people were really regularly dressing. So at that stage, calling tzitzit kli gever, when that could be a normal form of dress for everybody, might have been a little more challenging. But once it becomes that tzitzit is the mitzvah is really fulfilled. Thank you. Once it becomes that the mitzvah is really fulfilled, either by what we recognize as a talit, or by the talit katan, what we colloquially call tzitzit, which are really ritual garments. They're garments designed with four corners because men aren't wearing four-cornered garments so much anymore to provide the opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah. Once it becomes a ritualized garment, the argument that there could be an issue of cross-dressing becomes far more compelling. And that, what we were talking about last time as well, was that in some ways taps into, in a certain sense, is almost a halachic expression of a kind of intuitive reaction that many people have to women in a talit or women in tzitzit, which is that it's some sort of boundary crossing. So sort of like a halachic expression of that could be looking at kli gever. And we also saw a few possibilities for possibly addressing that concern. One possibility, feminizing the garment or having some kind of garment that would not be the recognizable ritual garment, but would be four corners made of kosher yarn and have fringes. Another possibility might be to be putting it on in private, where there's arguably, depending on whom you ask, there's arguably less of a concern specifically of kli gever. So those were some of the discussions we had last week. What I want to do this week is to move into what's even a more central aspect of the discussion of women in tzitzit. And this one too, I think we'll see, also seems to tie in to sort of an intuitive reaction that sometimes people have to the idea of women in tzitzit and women in talit. And it really even touches on a much broader issue, which is how do we relate to voluntarism? How do we relate to women? And women could be just a subcase of anybody. How do we relate to people who are looking to fulfill a mitzvah in which they're not obligated? And that's actually a trickier question than it might seem to be, because of course, even the name itself, the word mitzvah, relates to something being commanded. There's something almost paradoxical in saying, I'm going to fulfill a commandment when other people have been obligated in it and I've been exempted from it. I'm going to fulfill a commandment, but I wasn't commanded in it. And yet it's still somehow considered a mitzvah. It's not completely simple to think, you know, when we think that through theologically, what it means to do, as it were, God's will when he didn't expressly demand it in that fashion. Now, to get started, I'm gonna put on the screen share now. I'm gonna get started with the sources. And the first one I want to look at, let's see, I hope this goes smoothly. Hope springs eternal, right? All right, let's go for it. And yes, we got it. Okay, you're not seeing anything yet, but I'm seeing that it's going to work. The first source I want to look at tonight is one that we really only glanced over last time. Oh, hold on. Let me get this to be a little bit bigger. Let me see if I can do that. I'm trying to get my display a little bigger so that
it's the text fine. It's quite good. Yeah, I can read it very clearly.
You can read it clearly? Okay.
Yes. Now you put some of it off the page. It was better before.
I got it back on the page. I'm just thinking if there's some way that I can get, here we go. I'm going to get it. I'm sorry. I just want to get it. I like it to be very readable for everybody. Okay. This ought to do it. Yeah. I like that size. Okay, so this is a source that we looked at glancingly last time. We really skipped our way through it, and it's actually incredibly important in some sense for what it doesn't say as much as for what it does say. So this is Rambam, in Hilchot Tzitzit, and he writes, V'nashim v'avadim sh'ratzu li'tatef tzitzit mitatfim below bracha. So women and bondsmen who want to wrap themselves in tzitzit do so without a bracha. Why is the bondsman the eved here? Because the Eved is exempt from mitzvot aseh shesvan grama, just like women are. Okay, so they're both in this category of exemption from tzitzit. So what Rambam says, it says, yeah, if a woman wants to put on tzitzit, if she wants to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzit, she can. She just doesn't say a bracha. And he actually takes this, look at this. This becomes a paradigm for Rambam of women's voluntary mitzvah fulfillment. V'chein shar kol mitzvot aseh she'anashim p'turot mehen, im ratzu la'asot ota b'lo bracha, ein memachin b'yadan. And so too, other positive time bound commandments, if women want to perform them without reciting a bracha, no problem. Now, the question of whether or not women recite a bracha on voluntary mitzvah fulfillment is not our topic for tonight. I'm going to put it to the side. The thing that's so interesting to me is that I think in our day and time, the topic of tzitzit or talit for women is very ideologically charged. And what's extraordinary here to just recognize is that it's not charged for Rambam at all. It's so much the case that this is not a uniquely charged mitzvah, again, that he's using it as a paradigm. He's not using shaking lulav, which might be an easier or more obvious or more natural choice that you might choose today if you wanted to come up with an example. He thinks that your easy to use natural example for women performing mitzvot voluntarily is tzitzit. So one of the essential questions, what we really have to try to understand tonight is what happened. And part of the story of what happened is possibly Kli Gever that we discussed last time. But the other part of the story of sort of what happened to our relationship of tzitzit that it became so charged for women relates to another idea. And this and another halachic concept, and this is a concept called yura. Yura comes up a few times in the Talmud, and it kind of one of the paradigmatic cases is related to a Mishnah. There's a question about Rav Gamliel, if he can recite Shema, if someone can recite Shema when they're a groom. Or the question is, well, you know, who really is able to concentrate on their wedding night on Kriyat Shema? So maybe the groom is exempt. It relates to the question of ha'osek b'mitzvah, patur min ha'mitzvah, someone who's occupied in a mitzvah is exempt from performing another mitzvah. And it gets into the question of like, who can choose? So Rabban Gamliel, notwithstanding the basic halachic ruling that a chatan, that a groom on his wedding night would be exempt from reciting Shema, recite Shema on his wedding night. And there's a discussion of like, who can do that? Who is able to say that even when there's a halachic exemption, they're going to be, as it were, stringent, or say that they're in a slightly different category. And there are other instances as well. So here's one example. Kevan, so here we're talking about people doing malacha, labor on Tisha B'Av, which is an interesting halacha question in its own right. Kevan dechuli alma avdi malacha b'tei B'Av. If we're in a situation where, you know, everybody pretty much performs labor on Tisha B'Av, the iu lo ka'avid, but there's like one individual who's not doing it, mirsi kiyura, that's not okay. Why is it not okay for this person to abstain from performing, or potentially not okay for a person to abstain from performing labor on Tisha B'Av? Because it's not what everybody does. There's a halachic idea that sometimes doing this extra bit, which is out of step with what's commonly done, is yura. I haven't defined yura yet. You might see it in the translation. The word yura I translate here as spiritual haughtiness. It's sort of like, it's a little bit of self-aggrandizement, thinking that you're in a certain place. There's something else that's kind of interesting here. I'm going to say it tangentially. We'll come back to it, but tangentially for now, which is the question of how this all relates to chumrah. It seems like nowadays people are often praised for taking on additional stringencies in their religious life. And yet here we have an example of someone doing something which seems like it could be an admirable extra stringency, and yet it's being criticized as an act of yura. Well, a nice formal definition of yura comes to us by virtue of Sefer Abu Darham. Sorry, lost it with the cursor. Okay, Sefer Abu Darham says like this: Kol davar she'ein adam mechuyav bo ve'oseh oto berabim b'midat chasidut v'chol ha'am einam osim oto hu mitchazek yura. Any act or matter or thing that a person is not obligated to do, but does, now here's an interesting and important modifier, in public, b'midat chasidut, out of some kind of extra piety, the chol ha'am einam osim oto, and this is not what's done in general, meaning sometimes there are things that are not obligatory, but everybody does them. Something's not obligatory, but everybody does them, is not an issue of seeming to be spiritually haughty. But if you're doing something in a public fashion, which is different from what's strictly more, let's say, than what's strictly speaking obligatory, and it's not something that's widely accepted as practice, that's considered haughtiness. You know, there's a sense of who does this person think they are, kind of publicly taking on more than what seems to be good enough for the rest of the Jewish world. And that seems to be problematic. And now what's really interesting is in how often the question of yura comes up specifically in the context of tzitzit. This starts already in the time of the Gaonim, okay? We have a tshuva here from Rav Natronai Gaon. And it goes as follows. We're talking about the question of whether men should hold their tzitzit, you know, the holding and kissing tzitzit during Kriyat Shema. The question is that okay to do, or is that yura? V'hachi amar Rav Natronai Gaon, shesha'altem, kshiyikra adam Kriyat Shema, sarich lechoz arba tzitziotav olo. When someone is saying Shema, when a man is saying Shema, does he have to hold the four corners of his garment, the four fringes, or not? Davar ze lo derech hachamim v'talmidim hu. Ze derech yitirutu. Now the word yitirut, there are other versions where it calls it, and or it's quoted in other places using the phrase yihirut. Okay? So yeter could mean extra, and yitira could be related to yuhara. Okay? This spiritual haughtiness. V'chim me'achar shit bonem b'titziotav v'shata tifatanu b'rech aleyem. Why does someone need it? What for? A man's already, he's put on his tzitzis, he's made a bracha on his tzitzis. What does he need all of them for? Okay, there's an idea here that there's a particular concern about people handling their tzitzit in a way that might be over the top. Okay. And the Budarham quotes it. He's one of the people who quotes it. See, he uses exactly this language. He calls it Hirut, Yura. Okay. And there's another example that's very common that comes up with Tzitzit and Kriyat Shema. Don't worry. Halacha, we don't call it Yura. We'll get there. Okay. This is from the Shutma Ari Bruna. Shutma Ari Bruna, he's in the 15th century. He's in the 15th century Ashkenaz. Nishalti. What about the people who put their talit katan on top of their clothes in public? Okay, and they say they like that. They like making their mitzvah fulfillment of tzitzis more public. They want to externalize it. They want it to be out there for show. Michaishina and the Yura, Olo, should we concern that this is an act of Yura? Should we have a concern of Yura or not? Vishavti, Shikolafi, Hazman, the Minhag, the Adam, Ulfumriata, Nirali, the Ikalamichash. And I responded that this is all something that this, what is and is not considered Yura depends in part upon the situation. It depends on the zman, it depends on the time, it depends on what's customary, the minhag, and it even, this is particularly interesting, it depends on the person. There are people for whom performing a specific act might be appropriate, and there are other people who, if they perform that act, it might not be. I'll give a kind of an example, wearing tefillin all day. In theory, Ilana Bezrat Hashem next week is going to start teaching about tefillin, which is an exciting topic in its own right. I'm giving you a little sneak thought about it. In theory, tefillin could be worn all day. Now, not that many people do that, but there would be a difference between, I don't know, your neighbor's teenage son doing it, let's say, and a great Talmid Chacham doing it, right? And possibly in one case, it would be Yura. And in the other case, it wouldn't be. And indeed, Marie Bruna doesn't think that the young men should be walking around with their tzitzit. He's not talking about the fringes out. He's talking about the whole thing out over their clothes. He doesn't think that's appropriate. He thinks it's too much. He thinks it's Yura. And there's even another example. Okay, so I have three examples here of specifically the issue of Yura being raised when it comes to tzitzit. And this one comes from the Beit Yosef. He's quoting Maria Wuhav. We're not going to read it all inside. There's an idea. There's another opinion about how the holes for the tzitzit should work and how the fringes should be strung. And maybe it should be two holes like this and the fringes both coming out this way from the side of the garment as opposed to this way below the garment. Okay? So there's a genuine opinion that maybe the way that we set up the holes in the fringes of tzitzit is not correct. And the suggestion that's made is, ilav de mistafin, if I weren't afraid to say it, hava mina shiachol la'atil elo tzitzit kulam, lamarka de'itle or demarka de'itle. If I weren't afraid to suggest it, I'd tell someone to wear two sets. One according to each opinion. This is very, very tricky. It gets into possible questions of Baal Tosef of not adding on to the commandments. But still, there's an idea. Okay, so you have a chacham with an idea that maybe the way we make our tzitzit is not correct. This other method might be better. And he's thinking that maybe it would be possible to create a situation where someone would do it both ways and have in mind that they're conditionally, as it were, nullifying the tzitzit that are wrong, and God should just sort out which is the right one, okay? And habalach mir latzmo b'chayotzei b'zeh nichzik yura. Someone who in this kind of takes on this course of action is considered, according to the Beit Yosef, to be someone who is engaging in yura, Okay, so we do talk about men and women in ritual, and I think this is important for men and women as well, right? So there's a halachic idea of yura. There's an idea of kind of overstepping. And this idea, interestingly enough, shows up a lot around tzitzit. I think this also ties into what we were talking about last time. The more that tzitzit are pronounced as it really is not just throwing them on the way you'd throw on your socks or your shirt, but as putting on a unique ritual garment, the more that people are sort of doing more with that, showing that more, focusing on that more, there's more risk perhaps that they're going to veer beyond what common custom is and into the realm of yura. Okay. Now, how does this wind up pertaining to women? Well, let's start with the question of yura per se with women. What about, I mean, in general, so a woman is not obligated in a given mitzvah and she voluntarily wants to perform it. Is this an issue of yura? Is it a positive or is it a negative? And why not? Well, the Ravya addresses exactly this question, okay? Abe Nashim, kimakaimu mitzvah taseh, leika yura l'chulei alma. Ravya says very firmly, it's interesting, the Ravya and a lot of, the Ravya's discussions of women performing mitzvot on the whole are have a very positive tone to them. And here he says that when women take on a mitzvah voluntarily, according to everybody, it is not an issue of yura. Now, of course, the next question is, well, why not? How is he so sure? And the answer is, kevan de chulei alma yad v'besukah, v'taki v'shofar, v'napli lulav, v'lo shayach yura elehecha de mishane, mishar b'nei adams. It says, here's the difference. The difference is that this is something that everyone's doing. Remember, we talked a little bit about what the minhag is. What's customary, right? There's, it's not just a question, yura isn't just a question of, are you doing something that's not obligatory? It's also a question of, are you doing something that's not obligatory that nobody else is doing? And the Ravya says like this, he says, look, if nobody were listening to the shofar, or we're sitting in the sukkah, or we're shaking a lulav, then if a woman wanted to come ahead and do it, that would be a problem. But given that, let's say on sukkahs, you have lots and lots and lots and lots of men sitting in the sukkah, and, you know, I'd add if the woman wants to be part of the family unit in the sukkah, and you could even say that that's a better kiyum in sukkah of teshvu ke'en kaduru, that settling in the sukkah should be the same way that you're living, right? And it should include ideally all members of the family. Well, I mean, if that's really the case, then she's not doing something weird. She happens to be, a woman might happens to be technically exempt from the mitzvah. She can fulfill the mitzvah by sitting in the sukkah. And it's not spiritual aggrandizement because she's not doing something that's totally off. She's doing something that's being done by all kinds of people around her. And you know, the truth is that this argument of the Ravya very closely parallels another argument on of a very related concept. I'm just bringing it up because a few of the sources we're going to see in a minute are going to quote this concept as well. It's something that comes up in the Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi says that Chizkiyah taught, call me shehu patur mi davar ve'osehu nikra hediot. Anybody who does something that they don't have to do is considered to be a simpleton. Now, if this statement were taken at total face value, not just women, lots of men, a lot of our religious acts, we'd all be, I think, basically considered simpletons. The Ramban explains that when the Yerushalmi is talking about that, it means hatam shoseh davar she'eino mitzvah min haTorah klal, shehu kemosif al haTorah. That's when people are kind of making things up, okay? And this is very parallel to the Ravya. The Ravya says a woman is not engaging in yura when she engages in a mitzvah act that's being done everywhere around her. And the Ramban says, people are not being hediotot, simpletons, when they do something voluntarily, when that voluntary action is connected to mitzvah performance. It's not the same thing. When it's connected to a real mitzvah, it's not the same thing as making something up. It's the making something up that would be a problem, not doing something that there's a widespread pattern or custom or mitzvah of fulfillment for many people. All right. Let's get to the heart of the matter and let's see how yura, which we saw applied to tzitzit, and yura, which we saw applied to women, converge. Yura, women, and tzitzit. And the important source here, the most critical source here, is the Ma'aril. Ma'aril says like this, Ve'amar, Delo nehira be'enav ma sheyesh nashim machmisot atzman l'chiyuv tzitzit. Now remember, the Rambam had no problem with women in tzitzit, but the Ma'aril said it was not clear in his eyes, it didn't look good to him, that there were women who were entering themselves into the obligation of tzitzit. Now I'm going to stop here for a second because this is already fascinating. The Ma'aril is living in the 14th century for the most part. And I think it goes a little bit into the early 15th century. And the Ma'aril is responding to this, and he's not responding to this in a vacuum. Okay. What we have here is basically, there's a little historical note here. The Ma'aril is talking about women in tzitzit because there are women around him who have decided to start going about in tzitzit. It's not a theoretical question for him as perhaps it was for Rambam. It's a very practical question. It's a question at his doorstep. V'shalulo, mipnei ma eno moche biad harabanit bruna bi'iro, shinicha b'chol et talit katan. So there's a woman, and not just any woman, a rabbanit, marbanit, marat bruna. There's a known, somehow connected to a rabbinic family. There's a woman, I might venture to say Torah personality, not specifically in the area of learning necessarily. But there's a prominent woman who's going around all the time, becholeit, in a talit katan. And the Ma'aril has to relate to this, and he doesn't like it. And his students know he doesn't like it, and yet he's not doing anything. He's not protesting in any way what this woman is doing. Veshiv, shema ena makshevet li, val ki aygavna amar mutav yushogigin v'al yuhu mezidin. Okay, so he doesn't like it. Now, we still don't fully understand why he doesn't like it. But he says, the only reason I'm not protesting it is she's not going to listen to me. And I'd rather her err not knowing that she's going against the great posek of the times opinion than err and deliberately be going against a major posek's opinion. Okay, now just to put this in a little bit of further context, okay, like a generation or two before the Ma'aril, the great sage of Ashkenaz is the Maharam. Unless we think that this is just a Sephardi Ashkenazi thing, in the time of the Maharam, he says, and this is quoted here by his student, Tashbetz Katan, Mikol makom, ein limchot biadam militatev betzitzit ulevarech alav, jicholot lechayev atzman, kedimuchach bekidushin. The Maharam says, we don't protest women going around in tzitzit and making a bracha about it because they're allowed to do that. They're allowed to bring the obligation upon themselves. They here means women. In other words, we can even pinpoint the moment and the time at which there's a shift in rabbinic attitudes towards women and tzitzit, okay? In the Mishnah and the Talmud, we saw that women were exempt, but we had no reason to think that it was any different from any other positive time-bound mitzvah from which women are exempt, except perhaps for the question of Kli Gever, which is raised in the Targum Yerushalmi, but which doesn't really enter into a lot of early halachic discourse. Rambam has no unique issue with women in tzitzit. And here we see Maharam had no unique issue with women in tzitzit. So it's between the Maharam and the Ma'aril. We're talking in the 13th, 14th century, something happens in Ashkenaz and there's a different relationship to tzitzit. Okay. And it's just a fascinating to think that this doesn't often happen that you can pinpoint where something shifted. But here's where the shift really, at least officially, occurred. Now, at the same time, I should point out, it doesn't sound, from the Tashbetz's report, it doesn't sound like Maharam is excited necessarily about women in tzitzit. He's not talking about encouraging women. He's saying he's not protesting it, but still not protest without saying it doesn't find favor in his eyes. He thinks it's bad. It seems like he says it's acceptable. This is going to be contrasted with his attitude towards tefillin, which is going to be different. So the Maharam knows how to protest when he thinks something is a problem. Okay, more from the Maharil. And here he expands on what he thinks the issues are. Oner Eli. Ein mitzvat tzitzit kishar mitzvot, dehavu chovat haguf. Why is tzitzit particularly problematic for a woman to fulfill voluntarily? It's different from other mitzvot, and this is something we talked about last time. It's not chovat haguf. It's not on the person. We discussed last time that technically the obligation in tzitzit is when a person is wearing a four-cornered garment, when a man is wearing a four-cornered garment, then it must have tzitzit on them. But there's not a technical obligation for a man to wear a four-cornered garment, except as we saw last time in the Talmud, it's strongly discouraged for a man to avoid doing so. So now the Maharil says, this makes the mitzvah of tzitzit fundamentally distinct from other examples of positive time-bound commandments. Now, I'll say parenthetically that the Rambam did not seem to think that there was this kind of a distinction. He treated tzitzit as a paradigm, even though he also understands the mitzvah in this way. But the Maharil thinks this makes a big difference. Tzitzit, afo gav de kaimalan, chovat gavro lanim ilim mishi yesh lo beged bat arba knafot. Tzitzit only become obligatory on the person when they've got a four-cornered garment. Aval ein mechuyav liknot bat dalid, ela de mitzvah lachnis atzmo leklal chiyuv. First, a man is not obligated to buy a four-cornered garment. It's just that it's encouraged to fulfill the mitzvah and bring himself into the obligation. Okay. And the example he brings is actually a really poignant example for a whole topic about voluntary mitzvah performance, is actually from Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu wants to enter into Eretz Yisrael. And the question is, why does he want to go in so badly? And there's a midrash that says, wait, who wrote that? Like, is the reason he wants to go into the land just to eat the fruit? No. Moshe Rabbeinu wants to be in the land to have the opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah. That's different. But this, hanimili, these words are gavri. This applies to men when it comes to tzitzit. Aval nashi, but women, what do they need this for? In the end of the day, they're not falling into the obligation. So what's he saying? He's saying like this. For a man, there's already an inherent voluntary step to the mitzvah of tzitzit. Because a man does not always have to go with a four-cornered garment. For a woman, he's effectively saying it's a two-step. And for him, that two-step is a step too far. A man is sort of making a voluntary decision to wear a four-quartered garment, at which point he becomes obligated in tzitzit. A woman would have to make two decisions. To put on a four-quartered garment and to choose to fulfill the mitzvah obligation. And he thinks that's already too much. What's interesting is that already possibly gives us additional insight into why Yuara came up so much in general when it came to the mitzvah of tzitzit. It could be that one of the reasons Yuara comes up so much with tzitzit is because there is this certain element of voluntarism already embedded in the mitzvah. Even so, back to kind of like context, this is of course something that's an argument that's more relevant or in a context in which women are not wearing four-cornered garments as a matter of course, right? If a woman were wearing a four-cornered garment as a matter of course, and men were as well, then we'd be back to kind of a one-step voluntarism. Unless we wanted to say that the fact that technically they didn't have to would mean that from a halachic perspective, the two steps are always implicitly there. And he adds, "Af ki ra'iti nashim shelovshot." This seems to again be the reference to his neighbor Rabbanit Bruna. Even though I've seen this done, hamitmin. This is an expression from Masechet Menachot that means people who are acting in an astonishing fashion. Comes up with respect to doing some mitzvahs wrong when it comes to tzitzit. The yura chashiv nalahu. And here we are. And he considers women who do this voluntary two-step to have come into the world of yura. And then he adds, remember the Yerushalmi we saw? Umikru hedyotot. And this is also an example of people doing what they're not obligated to do and being considered simpletons. So those are strong words. One wonders if he would have been quite as rhetorically strong if he were not facing a situation which he disapproves of, and you know, in real time. That's a challenge, that's apparently a challenge for him to deal with. This major personality in his neighborhood going about this way and apparently inspiring other women. Maybe the rhetoric would have been, maybe he would have been a little bit more modulated if it weren't a pressing issue that he were facing. It's hard to know. Maybe he wouldn't have been. Maybe it's completely irrelevant. But the bottom line is that the Maharil is saying that when women have tzitzit, it really is an issue of yura. Now, on a technical halachic level, it's not crystal clear that this is really so different from the case of sukkah. When you think about eating in a sukkah, right? And this case of sukkah is one that was brought up explicitly by Ravia as something that's not yura when women do it. In the case of sukkah, so we have the obligatory meal the first night of sukkahs. And we can also, and we also have obligatory meals involving bread on Yontif Day and on Shabbos. And once you have a meal involving bread, then that needs to be in the sukkah during sukkahs as well. But we have an awful lot of time during sukkahs when technically someone could manage not to eat in a sukkah, right? Technically, if let's say a man wants to subsist on rice cakes and yogurt most of the time, right? You could make a strong argument that he does not need to do that in the sukkah. That's not obligatory. So that in some sense, it kind of parallels our discussion, right? Something that's not, let's say we're talking about eating lunch in the sukkah on the third day of Chol HaMoed. It's not Shabbos. Lunch in the sukkah, third day of Chol HaMoed. So a man doesn't necessarily have to do it. He can choose to not eat bread. He's choosing to eat bread. He's doing it in the sukkah. He's fulfilling the mitzvah to seshes shezman grama, positive time-bound commandment of eating in the sukkah. A woman would both have to choose to be eating the meal in the sukkah and would be trying to eat in the sukkah and would be trying to fulfill a mitzvah voluntarily. Yet we don't call that yura. So it's also kind of interesting. Again, there seems to be, in particular, when it comes to tzitzit, a very strong concern about yura. And this is the psak. If we look at the Mechaber Ramah, this is how the psak goes. Mechaber, Shulchan Aruch, just like Rambam. Nashim v'avadim p'turim, yipnei shi mitzvat aseh shezman grama. Exemption, positive time bound commandment. Rama, mikol makom im rotzim la'atfo levarech alav harashut biyadan. First of all, he says, look, if a woman's fulfilling this mitzvah, she can make the bracha. That's his position, generally speaking, about women in voluntary mitzvah observance, that they make the bracha. But, ach nichsei kiyura, v'lachin ein lahin lobosh tzitzit, ho'il v'eino chovat gavra. He basically takes the Maharil's argument, and that's the Psak Halacha. Wow, I see that we don't have a huge amount of time. Let's try to put the pieces together. The question becomes, okay, so is that the end of the story? Do we basically say that once it became a matter of yura, once it's defined by Maharil as a matter of yura, tzitzit become off limits to women 100%? Or is there any room for any possibility for women for women to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzit. Interestingly enough, there actually is a posek who doesn't seem to agree with the Ramah, who comes after the Ramah. That's the Chai Adam. The Chai Adam of Adam Danzig says, Nashim p'turot mitzitzit, mitnei shu mitzvat aseh shezman grama, sherei laila lav zman tzitzit, so women are exempt. U'mikol makom imrotzot labosh uvarech yichol uvarech, but women can do it if they want to do it. And that's a law for all positive time-bound commandments. And he doesn't mention URI at all. So there actually is a very important halachic voice who seems to paskin against the Ramah, that we don't have to be concerned for URI. Again, another interesting, complicated thing with the Ramah both says that the woman would be fulfilling the mitzvah and says that if she does it, it's not good because it's URI. So that's also a tricky thing to balance. Wait, you have the opportunity to fulfill a Torah-level mitzvah, but it's Yura. What do you do? And now, in general, it really is very strongly discouraged by the different poskim. The Aruch HaShulchan, the Ben Yishkai. You could keep going on and on and on again with poskim who say you can't do it. The thing that's particularly interesting to me, though, is that you could talk about the possibility that Yura might possibly be able to change. So, for example, we talked earlier about Rav Notronai Gaon's position that a man should not be kissing his tzitzis when he says Shema. And the Beit Yosef talks about that, and he says, Achshav shenagu bahem k'tza p'nei adam tulo michzik Yura. He says, now that there are men who do it, and it, in his days it was a few, and now I think it's more than a few. Now I think it's become very commonplace for men to kiss their tzitzit during Shema, right? I think it's accepted practice in many communities, if not most. Something that was once clearly an act of Yura, to Rav Notronai Gaon, is no longer defined as Yura. In other words, if Yura does relate not just to how many steps of voluntarism are you undergoing, but also relates to what are the customs of the Zman and Makom, which we saw earlier, right? So, I mean, all the historical context I'm putting in here is already kind of built in to some extent to the halachic discussion of Yura. Then it is possible that tzitzit as Yura for women is something that could change. For example, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, an important article called The Human Social Factor in Halacha, floats this, it's possible. It is not inconceivable that at some point, fully responsible and fully committed gedolim will re-examine the Maharil's position regarding women's wearing tzitzit. Right? So this hasn't really happened yet. So it's not as though a woman interested in wearing tzitzit could say, forget about Yura. I don't care. That would not be appropriate. And yet, it's a possibility that something that could shift. There's something else that's interesting, which is a question, which is, does Yura apply to things that are done in private? Which is actually a really interesting question if you start thinking about it. Is spiritual haughtiness, remember the Bacharim, the young men who wanted to put their tzitzit out, and the emphasis was befarhesia, in public. Is spiritual haughtiness specifically an issue when people are taking on extra stuff in a way that other people can see it? Or is it a problem at any time when someone, even on their own terms, is doing something, no one else sees it except for them and God, but they're just doing something that's inappropriate for their own spiritual level? Is this a social spiritual consideration, or can it also be a purely spiritual consideration? So that's actually a real halachic question and debate. Of course, if we were to say, and in fact, the Shvud Yaakov says this, Rav Yaakov Reicher, that Yura does not apply when people do things in private, and it could be that a woman could wear tzitzit in private from the perspective of Yura without violating this. And indeed, there's a ruling by the Bach talking about the possibility of one of these tzitzit Yura cases, that someone could do it in private and it wouldn't be Yura. Okay, where does this leave us in practice? Well, there's a lot of really interesting psakim that have come out. So you have modern day poskim who've said that there really isn't a Yura issue anymore if it's done in private with a talit katan. So, for example, Rav Yaakov Ariel, who is not a liberal, the talit katan she'ena ner'et kanereh she'en yura. If a woman wears tzitzit and other people don't see it, it's not an issue of yura. So he clearly takes the position that yura is something that only applies when other people see. But he is somewhat going against the position of the Maharil that it's just the fact that there's double voluntarism that's an issue. The Maharil raised some other concerns, but they were really very different. There were things like, well, maybe you'll wind up carrying tzitzis on Shabbos or something, or wearing tzitzis or kilayim or shatnez. So Rav Yaakov Ariel says that potentially could be okay. And so too, Rav Melamed in the Pnine Halacha. Now, he puts this in a footnote, and it's important to point out that he puts in a footnote. In other words, he felt that for, you know, halachic honesty, as it were, he had to put it there, but he didn't want it to be his main ruling on the subject. So Rav Melamed says, Nireh she'isha harotza litatef betzitzit l'shem shamayim titatef betzina. It would seem that a woman who really wants to wear tzitzis for the sake of heaven can do it in private. And if she does that, there's not an issue of yura. And there's not an additional issue, which is, of course, a subtext for a lot of the modern poskim, of her seeming to complain about halacha or trying to undermine the halachic system, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? So he says, Laniyat dati, shegam kayom, ein limchot b'isha shemechavenet l'shem shamayim mitatefet b'talit b'tzibur, she'esh la'almi lismoch. He even says that from his perspective, though he doesn't think it's perhaps ideal if a woman were to wear tzitzit in public, he also doesn't think that's something that other people should protest because she has opinions to rely on. Why? Because im nashim rabot yinhagu kach b'tzina l'shem shamayim, harei shebemeshach hazman gam im yilbashu shelo b'tzina kfar lo yechashev hadavar kiyura. Exactly what we said earlier, Rav Lichtenstein suggested. If this were something that would start to be done in private a lot, eventually it would stop being yura at all. So what you have is you kind of have this amazing interplay of we have this halacha that really, or originally this mitzvah fell under the category of voluntary options open to women for voluntary mitzvah fulfillment. At a certain point in time, it became off limits, primarily as a function of yura. The Rama, when he rules about women and tzitzit, doesn't even raise the issue of kli gever, even though a lot of modern halachic authorities do. He only raises the issue of yura. But this issue of yura is not necessarily something that is unbending and that can't change. The same way that it came into being and applied appropriately in the Maharil's time, milieu, in light of both the concerns about yura at the time in general and other issues that we don't even fully understand that made this clearly an act of yura then, it's possible that it will not necessarily always be categorized as yura. And that's particularly interesting to me. And I think that, and we also have like here, there's another example. Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg. I mean, these are big names. Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, Zatzal. Yesh b'yadeinu dai mitzvot ma'asim tovim shenitan lechaven nashim lekayman. So he prefers for women not to do that. He prefers for women to focus on mitzvot that a woman's obligated in. And yet, imachar kozeh chashka nafshan davka b'mitzvot tzitzit. If after all this, a woman davka really wants to fulfill the mitzvot of tzitzit, ulai yesh makom shetelachna b'talit katan tachat pigdehen. Maybe there's room for the women to do it with tzitzis under their clothing. Okay? And then he qualifies it specifically if we know that the woman is really working on all of her mitzvot and is really committed to the world of Torah mitzvot. And yet, it's there. He places it there as a genuine halachic possibility. Okay, where does this leave us now? By the way, I should add one other thing, which is kind of interesting. Rav Yaakov Ariel also notes that he had a family tradition that a few generations before him, real tzaddikah of his family wore a tzitzit katan. I have a friend who comes from a Hasidic family who has a tradition from her family as well. It's known that in some circles, the circle of Rav Nosson Adler, who is the Rebbe of the Chasam Sofer, that the women, some of the women in that circle were wearing tzitzit. There seemed to have been some special women in certain time periods and in certain areas that did this in private. It's not widely known, I think probably because of exactly what we're talking about. Perhaps because of concerns, perhaps concerns of Yura, perhaps for Plegever. But there were women who did wear tzitzit in private. And I imagine there are women who have tzitzit on in private even now, and we don't necessarily know about it. Okay, so where does this leave us? And then I hope we have time for at least a few of the questions. I see there's some stuff on the chat that I haven't looked at yet. It's like this. So we have a positive time-bound commandment from which women are exempt. We have two major halachic questions that are raised with regard to it. One, kli gever, which relates to boundary crossing, and which perhaps can be addressed by the garment being a feminine garment, and perhaps can be addressed by the garment being donned in private. A second, yura, which relates to spiritual aggrandizement or haughtiness, two steps of voluntary action in an era where women don't wear four-cornered garments to start with. And here too, it seems that there is a possible framework, not according to all opinions, but according to many. There's a framework in which if a woman wants to fulfill the mitzvah and she wears a talit katan, it's not clear at all that she's crossing the halachic boundary of yura. At the end of the day, the reason why I think this is so important to see is because, so you have these halachic expressions of concerns about boundary crossing, this halachic expression also through yura of a concern of women sort of, you could say, spiritually overreaching or going into realms that maybe are not appropriate or fitting. There are different ways one could phrase it. But what's fascinating about this particular mitzvah in halacha is that there actually seems to be a way in which if a woman is committed to performing it, she could do it without running afoul of many major poskim with a very strong halachic basis for doing it in a very specific kind of a way. And that's particularly important because, and I think Rav Malamed's piece is especially important here, because once someone understands that that's the case, I think it changes a little bit the visceral reaction we talked about last week. Last week, we talked about picture a woman in talis, picture a woman with tzitzis, think about how you feel, think about what kind of reactions that would get, what that means religiously. And once I think we learn the sources, again, there can be contexts in which that's done in a way that that goes along with a package that that might be halachically concerning in other respects. But even so, if we look closely at this mitzvah on its merits, there's a way that it can be done in line with Sakalacha. And once you know that, I think even when we see, when we think about those pictures, the picture looks a little different. And the thing that starts coming to the fore may be more than the visceral reaction or the who does she think she is? Or she's bound, that's for men, not for women, is, well, you know, she is fulfilling a mitzvah. And, you know, the context actually can make a difference. And those are very interesting things. It's also really important to me because I've had many students over the years who've been particularly troubled by women not being able to wear tzitzit, not being able to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzit. And oftentimes, and this is interesting, oftentimes once they know that there might be a way that they could do it, that in itself is enough for them. What remains an open question to me is if any of them have gone ahead to do it in a private way, right? And that ultimately would be something that would be between them and God, which is, I think, in a lot of ways, there's the social considerations that are also halachic considerations. But that question about what it means between me and God is not something that we should lose sight of in this discussion. Okay, I'll take some questions.
Thank you. You want me to feed you the questions? Or you?
Sure.
Okay, let's go again. With or without editorial comment. Okay. Okay. Susanna pointing out that I guess you, Hara, is the same issue wearing two pairs of tefillin all day, etc. That, of course, you are rough for men too. I don't think that's really a question. Okay. Lauren pointing out, is it possible a woman used to rarely wear four-corner garments? I guess that's you were talking about that. It wasn't common.
It's unlikely, though, that it would have been specifically rare for women but common for men once we know that there's the institution of the talit katan. The moment we have a society that's relying on the talit katan for men, that means that we have a society where men are, generally speaking, not wearing four-cornered garments. So it's possible, but it sounds a little unlikely.
Okay, Ellen pointing out, of course, a lot depends on custom. The Hasidim do wear their Arba Konfot out. I will tell you, if I may, that Rav Schechter once told us that when he was in the Mishnah Berurah, it says that a Yirei Shemaim, a God-fearing person, should wear their tzitzis. He's not talking about the whole tzitzis. He's talking just on the fringes, on the strings, should wear it out. You know, the takin your tzitzis or leave it out. Rav Avad Yosef was very much against putting it out. Different views of the same issue for the men, Yuhara. So I remember Rav Schechter telling us that when he it says in the Mishnah Berurah that a Yirei Shemaim, a God-fearing person, should wear out his tzitzis. So he said when he was younger, he was taught God-fearing person from Moshe Feinstein, Rav Soloveitchik, but not every Tom, Dick, or you know, or can put on wear their tzitzis out. And today, everybody feels they're a Yirei Shemaim. Even to think that you're a Yirei Shemaim might also be a form of yuhara, but just to point that out, I think that's interesting. Okay, Ruth is just raising the question. I think it's really beyond the question whether tzitzis is a chovat gavra or a chovat on the beged itself. In other words, does a four-cornered piece of clothing require any tzitzis?
You want to address that? If you have a four-cornered garment in your closet, man or woman, there's no obligation for tzitzis to be on the garment in the closet. Okay. It's sort of a hybrid. It's when the garment's on the person, then there's an obligation. But the person doesn't have to wear the garment, and the garment doesn't need the fringes when it's not on a person.
All right. Ellie is pointing out what you alluded to, that what the Pnine Halacha sort of says at the end, that you can object or you should object if a woman is only wearing tzitzit to show off and doesn't care about other mitzvot. Yeah, I think that came out clear. Okay.
I think that's also, I want to say, I think that's part of the issue here, and this touches on the denominational politics aspects of this as well. I think, you know, that question of how are you volunteering to perform this mitzvah when you're not performing other mitzvot? So the question of motivation. So I think with the denominational politics, it's particularly sensitive because there's a sense of you're taking on tzitzit, but are you doing this on Shabbos or something like that? But there is a way in which that's a concern. I think it's important for, in particular, from my experience of women that I've taught this to, there's a sense a sense of feeling embattled that their motivations are being questioned. Very frequently. And even if they're not necessarily looking to wear tzitzit, but even if they just want to learn more about it or think about it, and that is really very sensitive. So it's this tricky balance on the one hand, and the Pnine Halacha, Rav Malamed's not the only one who says, you know, we saw it in Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg. We skipped it because we didn't have time. The Igrot Moshe also says, you know, a woman should be doing this specifically if it's in the framework of Yirat Shemayim, it's L'Shem Shemayim, and a lot of questions about the who and why. And the only thing I would say, though, is really that kind of ties back into the question of Yora itself, right? Because the question of Yora itself is touching on this on this broader issue of what really are your motivations. So there is a very strong reason why motivations would come up, and at the same time, that shouldn't be the whole discussion. So it's important. It shouldn't be the whole discussion, and it's also not clear to me who is in a position to assess the depth of someone else's motivations, right? Which is kind of complicated to do.
HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's about it, who can assess. And Lee is pointing out that why don't we apply the same standard for men? I think that's what I was alluding to before, 100%. I will say, if I may, that in Chaim Soloveitchik's famous article, Rupture and Reconstruction, he notes that the idea of Urad doesn't exist anymore. Like our generation with the shift to the right, that was what his whole article was about. We've ignored Yuhara, you know, all the chumras that we take upon ourselves that you, Lori, were alluding to at the beginning. So I agree it is a big issue, but, you know, that it should be an issue for men too. It's not a woman's issue, Yuhara. It's a men and women's issue.
It's complicated because, and this is part of it also, we're not just, right, when we relate to it for men, it's, well, that's a basic signifier that you're in, right? We want, of course, we want you to be a kosher yid in every way, shape, and form. But it's also, you know, well, if you're part of the mitzvah picture and you're a man, then of course you're wearing tzitzit, whether or not you did this and this and this correctly, right? So that it's one of the complications here. When it's the norm of what's done among a specific group, so Yura is less of a question, right? It becomes more of a question when it's not the norm of a group, right, with women. Yeah.
Okay, Alina is asking on the slippery slope argument, the fear that we let women wear tzitzit, they'll want to be counted towards a minion. They want to become rabbis, you know, the one aliyot.
Yeah. So it's a great question. And there are definitely many rabbanim who raise that issue. And I think it's really hard to know, right? And that's the problem with the slippery slope argument. The problem with the slippery slope argument is that on the one hand, you might be protecting things you might be heading off some kind of slide with things going in unanticipated directions. On the other hand, if something could be permitted and it's not be out of fear for some other consequence, which, you know, that's a classic form of halachic decree. But sometimes you run other risks that of their effect on the community. Again, the shir is not advocating for women to wear tzitzit. That's not the idea. But in particular, what we were talking about was specifically we saw a lot of room from some modern halachic authorities for a woman to wear tzitzit in a private way. And I imagine that if it were being done privately, it would carry fewer of those slippery slope concerns as well.
I just say, to show how complicated the slippery slope argument is, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik has a comment that's so ironic in historical context. He wrote when the issue of women saying, you know, Kaddish, which I think in most circles is a non-issue, but it was a big issue at one point, at least in the modern Orthodox world. And he said, we should allow women to say Kaddish because we don't allow what's allowed. They're allowed to say Kaddish. And if we're afraid of the slippery slope, you know what? If we don't allow them to say Kaddish, they're going to want to have Aliyot. They're going to say, if you're not going to let us get, we're going to want to have Aliyot. And it's, of course, so ironic because, you know, that move has happened. So I don't know what he would say. It's very unclear to know where the slippery slope may lead, when it is good, when it isn't good, et cetera. Okay, Amalia, I don't fully understand your question, to be honest. So maybe you can, if you want to say it on your own, just let me go through the rest. We'll come back to it. Yeah, Susanna pointing out, it seems like the URI is only made an issue for women. That's what I would write. Okay.
So I don't think, just in fairness, that's not 100% true. I mean, Bachrim with a, let's say Bachrim who are in yeshiva and they're asking about, are they wearing their tzitzis when they're playing basketball or whatever things, am I going to wear my fill-in all day? They're going to get a conversation about Yura. It does come up. I think the issue is more that, again, when something is not normative for a given group of people, that's where we have bigger concerns for Yura. And there are more practices that are not normative among women. So that's why it would perhaps come up more frequently with women.
Okay, Ruth is concerned. I don't think you need to be concerned that she has a beautiful shawl with four corners, and she's afraid to wear it, not because she wants to do tzitzit. She just wants to know maybe if she's wearing it and not wearing tzitzit. But since a woman is exempt from tzitzit, there's absolutely no obligation to put it on. If you want to, that's the whole discussion here. If you want to add a tzitzit, but for sure, there's nothing to be afraid of. And just to get back to, I'm sorry, Amalia's question. When saying when ancient times, four-corner garments worn by priests, okay. A priest would cut off a corner to determine if an underling was a real priest. Not to enable them to determine if a novice was really a priest, to start to connect the garment, not to have a corner. I'm sorry, I don't understand that. If you want to explain what the question, Lori, maybe you understand what they're driving at?
I'm not sure, but I would invite you to send an email to explain after, so that we can bring it to the group once we understand what you're trying to get at. I'm not sure I understand this last comment. I see URS from the Ace of Midrash. I'm not sure what that means either, but I'd be very interested to hear.
I'm also not clear. Yeah, from the Ace of Midrash. I don't know. Well, you mean that Ace of trying to trick his father on Truma? Do you have to take Truma on salt and stuff? Maybe is that what you're referring to? I don't know. Okay. If anybody has any questions orally that'd like to address, we can spend a couple minutes doing that. Otherwise, we look forward. Ilana Sober El-Safun will be giving the next 2 weeks on Tfilin. So we look forward to that. And then, Lori, you'll be back in 3 weeks, please God.
Throughout Hashem. And everyone, Ilana is fantastic. I'm so proud to be sharing this opportunity to learn with you with her.
I first learned with Ilana, probably going back 18, 19 years ago in Toronto. So I'll second what Lori has to say. We look forward to seeing you all this evening at 8 p.m. Moshe Sokolov on the Haftarah of the week. And of course, tomorrow we have a triple header, two shirim on Thanksgiving, Turkey Torah on Thanksgiving, Zev Elif on getting a footing in America at 11 a.m. Eastern time, and at 12:30, Ari Zivotofsky on the kashrut of turkey and other exotic birds. So those are our two Thanksgiving shiurim. And then tomorrow evening at 8:30 p.m., Rabbi Daniel Karopkin, the rabbi of debate in Toronto, the president of the RCA, will be giving our Parshat HaShavua Shir. So we look forward to seeing you and your friends and more learning. And thank you very much. And thank you, Lori, for the first three parts of Chazaka already. And then we'll continue in a few weeks. Okay. Thank you, everybody. Okay. Laila Tov. Laila Tov, everybody. And for those Americans who are celebrating, enjoy the turkey, but turkey without Torah isn't kosher. Turkey with Torah, maybe, but okay. So that's all right. Be well.